From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield, this is Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.
Strike three called, it is well with my soul at J.I. Clement Stadium.
Your all-access look into Eagle Athletics is Inside Eagle Nation.
Toogie with one, a three, and a win it! Got it! Game over!
Let's go to the Learfield studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
Welcome in once again to another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. A busy time of the year once again for Georgia Southern, as a lot of home events this past weekend in Statesboro. We'll dive into all of those in the next couple of minutes.
And even more this week with homecoming.
Let's do it.
And I'm glad you're here on time because of the traffic.
Yeah.
The fair's back.
Oh, yeah, it is. You know, there's one... I love where we live. Like, our house. I love it. Love where we live. It's kind of off on its own. There's one week a year where I don't like where we live.
And that week is this week. One.
Just past the fairgrounds. And I forget about it until I get to that light of Veterans and Fair Road, and then I see all the red lights of the brake lights, and I'm like, oh, man.
Well, you're thinking, okay, my week's all set up. I'm going to go home and back, home and back, home and back, knowing exactly what I'm going to do. I get past the lighted Burkhalter, and then, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I like the normal of the 51 weeks out of the year where our commute from our house to Hanner or Paulson is 7 minutes.
Take a look to the left, you see the Ferris wheel, you see the tilt-a-whirl, you see the thing you got to hit to the ham. What's that thing called?
The strongman.
Eat you a funnel cake and some fried Oreos and.
Yeah. That. Anyway, Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed.
A little early for a tangent this week, Eagle Nation.
Oh, we're going to get into more of them. Don't you worry. Inside Eagle Nation is always presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook. As always, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Something tells me Arcola Septic might have a little bit of business with fair food.
And considering as much rain as fell this past Saturday at Paulson Stadium and in the surrounding area, they might have got a little bit of extra work thrown their way.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen Frank Sulkowski and Russ Brown quite as damp as they were when they got back up to the booth finally on Saturday.
They planned ahead, but even so, we thought it might stop eventually. But it rained from about, I would say, noon until late that night. I can't give you an exact time, but it seemed like it rained almost all day.
Yeah, it pretty much did. Taking a look back, as we mentioned, a lot of home events this past weekend for Georgia Southern Athletics. Georgia Southern men's soccer falls to 6-6-1 overall. Had John Murphy on the tailgate show, had to relocate that because of the weather, and I was not very happy with old Mother Nature there for about 20 minutes because we made the decision a couple of hours before we went on to move upstairs because it had been raining all morning at Allen E. Paulson. Decided, you know what, with a leaky roof on the stage, probably not a great idea to put all the radio equipment up on the stage with the wind and the rain. Made the decision, and about 12:45, about 15 minutes before we go on air, it stopped. No rain.
Maybe the only part of the day where it wasn't doing something.
There was no rain for about 30 minutes, and every minute that ticked by, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And then finally, about 30 minutes into the tailgate show, it became this downpour, right, and I was a lot more happy.
Make us smart. Make us act like we know what we're doing. Get it upstairs. The thing that I liked about having Murph on is hearing him explain offsides to big guy in a way that he would understand, talking about wide receivers being 10 yards downfield. That was fun.
Yeah, he essentially said that offsides was a moving line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And I think Frank now is a soccer fan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But Georgia Southern men's soccer fell to Central Arkansas 2-1 on Friday evening. Central Arkansas making their first trip to Statesboro as first-year members of the Sun Belt Conference, as a associate member, just in men's soccer, a member of the Sun Belt Conference. But Georgia Southern men's soccer will look to bounce back on Tuesday. If you're listening to this on time tonight, 7 o'clock, the kickoff against Winthrop in non-conference play. A 7 o'clock kickoff from Eagle Field and Irk Park.
And they've only got four matches left, too.
They do. And then on Saturday, they'll be at Howard up in Washington, D.C., 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. Four matches, and then, what was it Frank said? Why in God's name they put the Sun Belt Conference Men's Soccer Tournament in Boone, North Carolina?
Well, we're going to get to see that here in about a week and a half, so we could probably relay a little bit of info.
Yeah, don't remind me. Every time we go up there, it snows. And I like snow for about a week a year. It's kind of like the fair. I like snow for about a week a year, and then I'm done with it.
It just so happens that the amount of time per year that we're in Boone, it actually works out
right
to about a week.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's about all you want to
handle. Pretty much. Georgia Southern women's soccer also at home this past weekend. Friday against Arkansas State fell 1-0 and then bounced back on Senior Day on Sunday against ULM with a 2-1 victory for Georgia Southern women's soccer. And hats off to Josh Moffitt coming in as the interim head coach, finding out that he was going to be leading this program just a couple of weeks before they started off the season. With two regular season games left, they will be at Louisiana on Friday, an 8 p.m. kickoff, and then a 1 p.m. kickoff on Sunday against Texas State out in San Marcos. That's a little bit of a weird trip. You go to Acadiana on Friday, 8 p.m. kickoff, so you're probably not getting out of Acadiana that night. Get up Saturday, either a flight or a long bus ride to Texas State for a 1 o'clock kickoff on Sunday. That's a heck of a trip to finish off your regular season, oh, by the way.
That's minor league baseball-esque.
Yeah, and you're not staying for 3 days.
Where you've got a night game and then a long bus ride somewhere, and you just find out, oh, it's an education day the next day, so we're going to get this rolled about 10:30 a.m.
Oh, Lordy.
So have fun.
Yeah. Good luck to head coach Josh Moffitt and Georgia Southern women's soccer on a heck of a grueling trip. Georgia Southern Women's Golf, we mentioned, finished up at the Jupiter Invitational last week on Monday and Tuesday, took third out of 11 teams. They will be off this week. The next time they will be in action will be November 4th and 5th. They'll be up in Macon at the Idle Hour Collegiate. Georgia Southern Men's and Women's Tennis was at the ITA Regionals this past weekend down at Florida State. Day 2 was moved indoors because of Tropical Storm Nestor coming through the area. But Naja Meyer, the only Eagle to advance to day number 2. But day 2 was moved indoors because of the tennis courts were unplayable because of Nestor.
We did not have that luxury.
We did not. Well, we did. Frank and Russ didn't.
That's true. Terry kept saying the whole game, Russ, I don't know what you're talking about. Is it right here in the booth once?
Georgia Southern men's and women's tennis will be off this coming up week. Georgia Southern Cross Country, it's time for the Marab Nagwandala segment. As this past Saturday, they were in Bluffton, South Carolina at the Sand Shark Invitational hosted by USC Buford. Took fifth place, 135 points as a team. Nagwandala set another record, as you would kind of imagine. Took fifth individually out of 150 runners and set a school record for the 5K time of 17:58.8.
So now she owns multiple school records.
Correct.
Hats off. That's awesome.
And she's getting to the point where she's starting to break her own records. When you can be in the record book once, that's great. When you can break your own record,
you probably feel like AP and Tracy a little bit breaking your own record.
You're not joking.
It's like, wait, so whose record did I break? Yours.
Oh.
All right, here we go.
Cross country will be off until November the 2nd. They'll head up to McDonough, Georgia, outside of Atlanta. A Sun Belt championship for Georgia Southern cross country. Swimming and diving took a tough loss against North Florida this past Sunday down in Jacksonville. They will be off until November 1st and 2nd when they'll head up to North Carolina to face off against UNC Asheville. Rifle was off this past week. They will head to Dahlonega coming up on Saturday to face off against North Georgia and UAB. Again, up in North Georgia, up in the Dahlonega Mountains. A beautiful part of Georgia.
Absolutely gorgeous.
If you hadn't been there, that's a trip you need to make.
have not been that far north in Georgia, but that's definitely a spot I'd like to check out.
Oh, just wait. We'll
Terry talks about Dahlonega. Oh, Terry Dahlonega is a big Dahlonega fan.
My cousin went to North Georgia, and so it was being able to be up there for a couple of years and just awesome campus.
You've got Hiawassee up there, I think, too.
You've got Hiawassee. You've got Helen up there. Big fan of Helen.
There you go.
Big fan of Helen. Georgia Southern Volleyball, a tough weekend inside Hanner Fieldhouse on Thursday, fell to ULM, a heck of a match. 3-2 they fell to the Warhawks of ULM. That place was absolutely packed.
Yeah, it was.
And it seemed like every point that Georgia Southern scored, and that was a back-and-forth match the entire time. I don't know that any team really ran away with any of the sets, but every point Georgia Southern scored, that place was going nuts leading into Eagle Madness on Thursday.
Yeah, the idea to tie that in with getting introduced to the 2019 women's and men's basketball teams was an excellent idea. That's the largest volleyball crowd I've seen since I've moved down here. Turned out to be an excellent five-set match. You do feel for that squad a little bit because they were right there. They had a 2-1 lead. ULM comes back to win the fourth set, and then they had a pretty comfortable victory in set five. I actually talked with Efren Negron after the match. He said they're close. They're close. It's just a matter before they get to the top of the mountain and then go downhill.
But a heck of an event afterwards with Eagle Madness. You mentioned getting introduced to both the men's and women's basketball squad. You had a dunk contest.
Yeah.
Ado Umanami got dunked over, and that place went ballistic.
I think they were more excited for Ado than they were for Jordan Walker. They were more excited for the guy getting jumped over, but Jordan's a local guy from Richmond Hill. He was a walk-on a year ago. Knew he could get up, but I didn't know he was going to jump over Ado. That was neat.
You had the six judges on the table. You had three from the student body that they picked that night. Then you had three from Georgia Southern women's basketball. Haley Dias Allen, Nicole Franks, and Nikki McDonald were the three judges on the side representing women's hoops. And, yeah, that threw up pretty much all tens.
Didn't even win, though. Isaiah Crawley got the victory. It was two rounds. All Crawley needed to do was make his dunk in the second round. He did that, and then they moved on to the three-point competition. The odds-on favorite was David Vitti, and as well as he did, Trevion Lamar simply couldn't miss.
He was lights out, and that's really the first time that I've seen him really shoot consistently. That guy's got a nice shot.
It's something that's really going to help this program. You know, there'd been a disconnect between Georgia Southern men's basketball and recruiting the Savannah area for a while. You'd love to see that get going once again. And even though it's not a direct Savannah route, he's coming from Northern Oklahoma, Tonkawa, great junior college program where he's coming off a couple of different injuries. But he did play at Jenkins, had a fantastic high school career, Savannah Morning News Player of the Year, won a state championship. If you could open up that pipeline, that's only going to grow the program even more. And now with Coach Byington in year seven, you're looking for ways to push that envelope. You know what you're going to get out of a Byington team, but if you can add a new element to that team from not very far away, that's going to serve them really well.
Volleyball would also fall on Friday, 3-1 to the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana. They will be on the road to the Alabamas this weekend. Friday, 7:30 first serve against South Alabama down in Mobile. And then they'll make the trip up to Troy to face off against the Trojans. 7:30 serve as well on Saturday for head coach Chad Willis. Georgia Southern softball finished up the fall portion of their schedule against East Georgia on Friday. Had to cancel the game against Coastal Georgia on Saturday, again because of Tropical Storm Nestor coming through the area. And then finished up with a doubleheader against USC Buford. And really starting to see Kim Dean have her stamp on this program. Got the new assistant coaches in this year for softball. And expecting a lot of pretty big things out of the yellow ball for Georgia Southern this year. Georgia Southern Baseball had to shift around their Fall World Series a little bit. It was supposed to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this past week. You had Team Wofford going against Team Richmond.
Yeah, Team Wofford is actually Cody Wofford. It's not. That's still weird because we were in SoCon before. Cody Wofford versus Jason Richmond.
So on Friday, they played the game as usual. Woff beat Richmond. And I'm sure he hasn't heard the end of it by now.
Well, they've had a chance to sit for a couple of days because of the weather. So, yeah, even more trash talk.
So, because of the weather, took Saturday off, took Sunday off, and then they're going to finish up the Fall World Series on played Game 2 on Monday, and then going to have Game 3 on Wednesday. Both of those are seven-inning games. And so that leads into the final fall game for Georgia Southern baseball. They will face off against Gordon State 4 o'clock on Friday at J.I. Clement Stadium. Come on out. Get to see a pretty good number of new faces for Georgia Southern baseball, especially on the pitching staff.
There's going to be some tough decisions made about who makes the 35-man roster, but you need competition in the fall. You don't want to have a dearth of pitching and then have to figure things out. It's better to have more than what you need and then say, you know what, these are my best. You guys keep working. You may get a shot next year. Heck, if somebody gets down, maybe you could get a shot to come up to the roster once the season begins in February. But you always want more than less, especially when you're talking about your pitching staff.
You got to see the game on Friday. Are you going Team Woff or are you going Team Richmond?
Woff, he's an aggressive guy. I think he's going to be a head coach one day. I think Jason Richmond has a chance to be too. Rich is much more the analytics. He's got his computer. He's got all the notes written down. They had scouting reports on all the hitters from Woff's team, which I thought was hilarious for Fall World Series. I think it goes three.
I do too.
I think Rich bounces back. I think the analytics went over in Game 2, and then how you're going to figure out your pitching for Game 3. And we still don't know what they're playing for, because I asked Rodney Hennon about this. Usually it's hot dogs or steaks. But when I asked him about it, he had this look on his face saying, you know what? I don't think they figured it out yet. So maybe next week, when we give you the results of the Fall World Series, we can tell you exactly what they're playing for and how that went down.
Georgia Southern men's basketball getting in the news earlier on this week as Lindy's as well as Street and Smith's picked them for third in the Sun Belt Conference. And you've seen anywhere from first to third in the Sun Belt from the preseason magazines. And really and truly, we've talked about this over the last couple of years. Preseason magazines, they're great to look at. They're great to get you fired up. But at the end of the day, whether you're picked first or you're picked 10th, it doesn't really matter.
You can take them into the bathroom with you.
Yeah.
Occupy some time, but until we get rolling here in about 2 weeks, it's simply something to take with you into the bathroom.
Yeah, pretty much. But congratulations to Georgia Southern men's basketball, picked third in the Sun Belt Conference by two publications. One final news note that we have to get to before we dive into the actual game action this past weekend for Georgia Southern football. Wesley Kennedy was named to the Paul Horning Award Honor Roll, which three players each week are named to this honor roll, and it's the offensive player that doubles as a return specialist. So this week it was Wesley Kennedy out of Savannah, along with Joe Reed from UVA and KJ Hamler from Penn State. So congratulations to Wesley Kennedy.
A career-high 28 touches, 24 of those were as a running back. He hasn't touched the ball like that since his days at Benedictine, but with Logan Wright being out, he's going to share the carries with J.D. King. They combined for 46 rushes of the 65 total. That's what you're going to be looking at a lot over the next few weeks until we get more clarity on what Logan Wright's availability is going to be for the rest of the year. And yeah, you're going to see Matt LaRoche, and he only touched the ball three times in the victory over Coastal Carolina. But this appears that Kennedy is going to get a chance to touch the ball a lot. We know how much of a game breaker he is, but he's also going to get a chance to be a grinder, try to help you win games by picking up those tough yards. And we know J.D. King, being as built as he is at 5'11", 220 pounds, he's going to get those yards. And think about the 14-yard run he had on third down to set up Kennedy to win the game where he broke four different tackles. Outstanding run.
As you look back at this Coastal Carolina game, there was one thing that really stuck out to me, and it stuck out for two different guys. Wesley Kennedy, J.D. King, just the never-give-up mentality that they have when they're running the football. There was a couple of times, and to pull the curtain back a little bit, during the game, I'm spotting, and so I'm looking through binoculars the entire time and then helping you kind of identify who made a tackle, and because there's so much stuff just going on.
And it's no easier because it was raining the entire time.
Right.
It might not seem like a lot, but any little bit of interference, it's something you got to work with.
So I'm watching the game through binoculars. So I'm seeing Shy Words handed off to Wesley Kennedy, J.D. King, and then watching them run into the pile, and I'm trying to pick out the number of the guy that made the tackle. Well, there were many times where I would see him run into a pile and start to take my binoculars down and then have to look back because, oh, he wasn't tackled. He went around and gained five more yards.
Kennedy did that the first drive of the game on another third down. He did it a couple of times running left later on in the game, and like we mentioned, JD in the third overtime on that third down play. It's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. I'm telling you, and I think it's unfair to compare this team to what last year's team did because it's, as we've said a lot of times, it's a different situation. It's a different set of circumstances, different kind of adversity, and how you're going to be able to respond to it. They all said it post-game. They're built for this. Number one, because of what they went through in 2017. Number two, because of what they went through last year. They know how to lose. They knew how to win. Winning felt a whole lot better. It's a mentality that they had to understand and be able to follow through with a couple of weeks ago to do it in a double overtime and then do it in triple overtime. How difficult it is to be down in overtime and down to your last shot and then a fourth and five, going for the whole thing, not trying to gain 5 yards, going for the downs, going for the whole Megilla. And Mark Bichaud, after he was called out of bounds incorrectly, it was quickly turned the other direction. I think everybody there knew that it was a touchdown. Coastal was celebrating like they were hoping it wasn't going to be overturned. They didn't even need to look at it in the replay sense. Mark Bichaud got the touchdown, tie game, second overtime, same play, other side of the field. I'm going to gush a little bit on Mark Bichaud because we don't talk about him very much.
All right, go ahead. That was going to be my next point anyway.
Okay,
go for it.
Senior from New York.
Yep.
We knew he went to prep school. He started Paramus Catholic and ended up going to Avon Old Farms in Connecticut. We know he's a senior. He's one of the four-year seniors on the roster. You've got him, Brinson Vildor, and Ty Phillips. Those are your four-year seniors. As a wide receiver, you don't get talked about a whole lot when you run an option offense. Mark's first year, he was a tight end. And I remember thinking, man, 6'4", 220. He's got a really good build for a freshman. He's going to be involved. And he has been. He has played a lot over 4 years. But you just don't know very much about him because he doesn't make a lot of catches. He didn't score his first touchdown until last year against ULM. And that was his only one coming into this year. He had one catch all season before those back-to-back touchdowns in the first overtime and then in double overtime. There aren't too many people on that team that are as respected as Mark Bichaud.
No.
This is something we've known about, but you don't get a chance to talk about him a whole lot. He's also a great barber, by the way. He's been the team barber for the last 4 years. He spoke at the press conference last week, and I think a lot of people in the room...
About that.
A lot of people in the room, I mean, they knew who he was, but he is a really soft-spoken kid, tremendous kid. He's been through a lot. I encourage you to go learn a little bit more about his story. He had to go to prep school because he got hurt. But he ends up coming to Georgia Southern, which is a long way from from Avon Old Farms up in Connecticut. With Mark, he was asked, what do you expect from Coastal Carolina this week? He said two words. A win.
Yeah.
He gets it. You just don't hear, you don't hear a lot from him, but to hear that, it was so quiet during that press conference. Because he stopped people cold in their thoughts. As soon as he said that, a win. Someone who was understanding of what true blue is, what blue-collar discipline and tough is, gets a chance to make the game-tying play, the go-ahead play, in another game that saved Georgia Southern's season. Otherwise, you're 2-4, and
yeah,
think about that.
Good.
Yeah, think about that. Now at least you're 3-3, 2-1 in conference play, you're a full game out of first in the East, keeping pace with Georgia State and Appalachian State. And we'll get to App State in a week and a half when we have to go to Boone. So glad that Mark got a chance to make a play like that. And even somebody like Trevor Bleem, both of them joined us on the coaches show last night. Trevor played the best game of his career. 5 tackles, 2 for loss, had that fumble recovery at the end of the first half when Coastal was driving after the blocked field goal. Great for him to finish off that week. He had gotten engaged the previous Sunday. Nice little topper, a little cherry on the sundae for him.
The thing that I think gets lost in translation a lot, and yes, Georgia Southern comes away with a 3-overtime victory, and at the end of the day, a lot of people will see is the 3-yard run by Wesley Kennedy to win the game. But those were the first two touchdown passes that Georgia Southern had thrown all year long.
All the excitement.
All year long.
We forgot to talk about that. We were the last team in the country to throw a passing touchdown. And it just so happened that it tied the game in overtime. And then the second one put you in double overtime.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, do it right.
You may as well. If you're going to go for the whole thing, you may as well set some marks on the way.
Georgia Southern gets the 3-overtime victory against Coastal Carolina, 30-27. Hopefully this weekend it's not a 4-overtime game, because that's kind of where we're trending.
That's what Coach said on Monday during his press conference. I'd like to be able to do it in regulation, and you know, we say high fours at the end of practice when we're trying to finish things up, have that mentality, okay, fourth quarter's got to be our best quarter.
Last couple of weeks, it's been fifth quarter, sixth quarter, high fives, high sixes, high sevens. Let's stop it at sevens. We don't need to go any more than that. But what came up was how they mentally and physically need to adapt to play more football. We hear all the time, okay, 60 minutes of Smash Mouth football, 60 minutes of Eagle football. What happens when it goes more? You don't stop doing it.
Yeah, and it's not timed, so you can't really say like 64 minutes.
So where do you pull it from? That's why Matt Greenhall and his staff are so important. That's why understanding what a blue-collar mentality means is so important. And that's why Georgia Southern has picked up two wins that they absolutely had to have to get back to 500.
We'll dive into the New Mexico State Aggies coming up in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we step aside for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
All right, Roger, since this is homecoming week, give me a story that a whole lot of people wouldn't know about, let's say, Paul Johnson.
When AP, that's Adrian Peterson for y'all, was playing here at Georgia Southern, his head football coach was Paul Johnson. Strength coach was Mike Brass. Mike's phone rings me from the practice fields. I'm over here getting ready for a football game, painting this field when it used to be grass. One day it'll be grass again, but when it used to be grass. But Mike's phone calls me, and I answer the phone, "What the hell do you want?" It was not Mike Brass. It was Paul Johnson. Paul says on the telephone, "Adrian Peterson just tore his blanking knee on your football practice fields." One of the few times in my career that I'm speechless. I have no idea what to say, how to respond. I just know that my grass tore up a knee and that AP may never play football again. That's everything that's going through my head. Thank goodness, in the background, I hear Mike Brass laughing. And finally, Paul said he was just giving me health and trying to give me some payback for all the stuff I had done to him and his staff in their tenure here. Paul had me that day. He had me going, you know, it's one of the few times that Roger Emma was speechless.
Thank you, Roger. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
Welcome into another edition of Beyond the Bio here on Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics, as we step back into the Georgia Southern women's basketball offices with assistant coach Coretta Brown. And coach, you're no stranger to Statesboro. Grew up here, went to Southeast Bullock. When the opportunity to come back to Statesboro to coach here at Georgia Southern came up, what was the biggest thing that kind of went through your mind?
No-brainer. You know, back home, ton of family still here, tons of friends still here. Actually just celebrated my blah, 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 class reunion, you know, a couple of weekends ago. So I'm so thrilled. I'm truly blessed to even have this opportunity.
Now, when you left Southeast Bullock, you went to UNC Chapel Hill, had a great career there. Take us through how having such a successful college career helps you now into coaching.
Well, it was a lot due to my college coaches, really, who, you know, I'm blessed to even get into the business because of the time that he put to not only make sure that I grew on the court, but off the court, you know, and that's part of the reason why I coach is that basketball, yes, a game, but you learn so much more about life lessons, you know, by playing a sport that, you know, you may not get anywhere else. And that's part of the reason why I coach is, yes, we want to win ball games, what coach don't, but to make sure that those young ladies are successful off the court as well.
Ever since Coach Howard and the staff has gotten here to Statesboro, we've heard throughout the tenure so far of getting better each and every day. One of the things that you've kind of set that example by, you had your college coach come down to Statesboro a couple of days ago to help you and coach you a little bit. Take us through that and what that decision was like.
It was easy. It's a no-brainer. You know, my thing is, we call it the 1%. And we tell the players constantly, regardless of what you're doing, if you're playing sports, if you're in your career, every day that you're blessed to take a breath when you wake up, your goal should be to get better, you know, get better at something. So, I mean, it's 2019. Everything's evolving. Cars are better. TVs are better. Phones are better. You know, they probably got an iPhone 30 that we haven't even seen yet. You know, so you got to be in the business of getting better, you know. So I was truly blessed that my college coach was able to come down and coach me. You know, as coaches, we need coaches too. We can't tell our players to get 1% better, and then here we are thinking we've arrived. And, you know, he pointed out some stuff that I have to continue to get better at.
Once you got finished with your career at Chapel Hill, was drafted into the WNBA, take us through that experience and what that was like for you.
Awesome. Living the dream. I mean, living the dream, like, you got to understand, basketball is my first love. Like, I love this. I'll be doing this when I'm 80 and in a wheelchair, you know, because I know of the doors that it opens and the life lessons that it brings. So to even have a chance to be in that 1%, you know, like that's literally the people that make it to professional sports, to even have that opportunity to play for the years that I did, like it was truly a blessing. And I learned a lot. Lynn Dunn, who's my coach, I think she's at Kentucky now, learned a lot, saw the game from a different eye, you know, just really been blessing the people that's came along and pouring into me. And now I kind of want to return that favor to my players.
Where did that love for basketball for you start?
I think I was five. I'll never forget. It's crazy that I remember that. Man, I'm almost 40. But I was five. We were coming home one day, and my neighbor, I grew up playing against guys. My neighbor was outside shooting around. And I asked my mom, like, Mom, what is that? She was like, oh, it's basketball. I'm like, basketball, what is that? And so I went over, and I shot with him for one day. And after that, it was hooked, completely hooked. Every day, like, Dad had to put up a goal. I got a new basketball every Christmas. That's the only thing I cared about. Like, I was completely hooked after that.
We've talked about your basketball career going from Southeast Bullock to UNC to the WNBA and then into coaching. When did you decide that coaching was something that you want to do and, like you've talked about, kind of give back to the players that you have now?
I think it was my junior year at Chapel Hill. You know, I went into Chapel Hill thinking I was going to be a business major. One semester, decided that was a joke. So I think it was about my junior year when I actually saw the growth. You know, like I said, I had some awesome coaches who just really poured into me. And I was starting to see the benefits and kind of picked up a little spill on that. I'm like, man, like, you know, this coaching thing is more to it than just the basketball, what people see. Like, I think I kind of like this. So it's kind of when I got that bug then.
Give us a little bit of your philosophy of when you see a team that has Coach Brown on the staff, what are you going to see out of that team?
I think when you see a team that has Coach Brown on the staff, everything starts from the top up, you know, so it's a trickle-down effect. And that's one of the reasons why I was so excited to come and work with Coach Howard, because she's a winner. And so if you want to win, you surround yourself with winners, you know. So I think that's what is going to be the most pleasing about this staff. We're going to work hard, you know, when it comes to us. There are no hours. You know, we're going to do whatever it takes to get the job done. And we want our players to just reflect that. You know, if our players reflect anything of, like, what we are, we're going to be exciting to watch this year.
Now, you and I were talking before we started recording. When this podcast comes out, you'll have 8 days until your first exhibition game when you hit the floor. What's the biggest thing that you've seen grow from when you got here to Statesboro until now?
I think a lot. To be honest, you know, we were talking earlier and I was a little nervous. You know, when you look at the record, it kind of didn't know what to buy into. But these girls really want to win. Like, these young ladies, they want to win. They seem to be buying into what we're preaching and what we're telling them every day. They're putting in the extra time. You know, they're sending texts like, hey, coach, what do I need to be working on? So I think that's going to be the beauty that we should be able to see this year.
Whenever you got here to Statesboro, met the new staff, what were some of the biggest things from the staff side that you saw that you were like, this is something that I really want to be a part of?
I think just the knowledge. You know, like, we all work together so well and we bring different things to the table, which is freaking awesome. You know, like, you got Coach Howard who's leading. Then, you know, you got Coach Coop who's a gorilla when it comes to recruiting. You know, then you got Coach Straker who is got the X and O's. I don't think it's a play out there that he probably doesn't know, you know? And then, you know, you got me just kind of filling in the spaces, recruiting assistant, wherever needed. So we're literally, and I tell recruits this all the time, and I'm like, I'm not just saying this because I'm on the staff. Like, I think when Coach Howard calls us the dream team, like, that's probably the best way to describe it.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you around Hanner, seeing you around the office, people may not know something beyond your bio.
They probably don't know that I'm a good dancer. You know, like, I'm pretty lit on the dance floor. You want to dance off right now?
No, I don't. What's your favorite dance?
My favorite dance, I think it's called the whoa. That's what everybody call it right now. You know, I'm getting older. Today's my birthday, so I try to keep up with the latest dances so that I feel kind of young. So I hit the whoa a lot.
Coach, appreciate your time. Appreciate everything that you've already done for Georgia Southern Athletics. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Hail Southern.
Once again, that is new assistant coach for Georgia Southern women's basketball, Coretta Brown, a little bit of a celebrity around these parts. We'll get deeper and deeper into the season for Georgia Southern women's basketball. I'm sure this story will come up, but Frank Sulkowski was telling us the other day when we were at lunch with him that when she was at Southeast Bullock, she scored 100 points in a game. 100 in one game.
Can't imagine how she got to play North Carolina for Sylvia Hatchell. I have
yeah,
no
right. Can't imagine how she goes to UNC Chapel Hill. Can't imagine how she's a first-round draft pick in the WNBA.
But awesome for her to get to come back and coach for her hometown school.
So we dive into the New Mexico State Aggies, a 3 o'clock kickoff from Alan E. Paulson Stadium on Saturday for homecoming. Get to see a lot of Eagles, a lot of familiar faces around campus, hopefully this weekend, and hopefully the rain will hold off this weekend, I know.
Especially that last one.
Yeah.
Rain. We're good.
Yeah, I think that's become a four-letter word in Eagle Nation the last couple of weeks, at least for anybody working the game.
We know that Georgia Southern plays well in the rain. I'd have to look at some box scores from the past to see exactly how Georgia Southern has done when it's been a game-long rain or whatever. But from what I can think about initially, I want to say Georgia Southern's 5-0 in rain since I've been here.
I'll get along with that.
If you could think back towards how long it's been for since 2012.
Yeah, we covered this last week, how my memory is...
Okay.
Yeah. You're the memory guy. I'm the...
You're the... I'll tell you who makes the tackle.
Yeah, I'll tell you who blocked a field goal. You're the one that remembers everything. I'll tell you who it is. You just got to remember it.
That's perfect.
You better believe it.
Just got on the Aggies.
For the Aggies, you look at Doug Martin in the seventh season leading New Mexico State. We've talked about it a couple of times throughout the years, how he led them to their first bowl game for New Mexico State in a long, long time. A couple of years ago, but this season has not gone the way they wanted to. Their second year as an independent, 0-7 coming into this game.
And they're right in the middle of a three-game road trip, and when you're talking about having to travel from Las Cruces, New Mexico, nowhere you go is close.
No.
Even when you've got to go to play New Mexico in Albuquerque, that's a bit of a bus ride. That's about a five-hour bus ride. They're in the middle of a three-game road trip. They played 2 weeks ago at Central Michigan. Got this past week off. They played seven straight to begin the year, so they didn't even practice last week until Thursday. Doug Martin trying to give them some time away. So now they're coming to Statesboro for what could be their last ever trip. And then next week, they got to go play Ole Miss. That's their third P5 game of the year because they began getting crushed by Washington State and Alabama. So you really didn't know what they were those first two games. And they've had chances. But what's hurt them is that the opponent has scored first all seven games. They've only had a lead in one of their games. That was against New Mexico. They scored 52 points and lost.
And you really look at it, the first quarter, they've given up 80 points to just scoring 31. They've given up 103 points in the second quarter to just scoring 31 in the second quarter for them. So you look at it, halftime has not necessarily been a bright spot for New Mexico State.
What you might consider a bright spot is 2 weeks ago against Central Michigan, they were down 7. They might look at that as a bright spot and how they got there. Jason Hundley, their All-American who serves as their kick returner, he had a ridiculous touchdown run. It was 37 yards late in the first half. He had two different spin moves. I was watching the clip of it a couple of days ago. Threw a stiff arm, broke a tackle up the sideline. He's a dude. And you remember him here 2 years ago in Statesboro when Larry Rose, another All-American, was injured. Huntley ran for 99 yards. He had 11 catches that game. They're running the same kind of offense because Doug Martin, as we mentioned before, serves as his own coordinator. Now, the quarterback's different. Josh Adkins in year two running the system, but it's the same idea. A lot of crossers. The running backs are heavily involved, and they are going to take shots downfield.
You mentioned Adkins, 9 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, so hasn't necessarily been the most accurate quarterback in the world, but a lot of different guys that he can sling the ball around to. Their main targets are Tony Nicholson, 3 touchdown receptions on the season. OJ Clark, a familiar name that people will remember him over the last couple of years, along with Isaiah Lottie. And it seems like, I think back a couple of years ago when Georgia Southern was still in the SoCon, and you would see Wofford, you would know Eric Breitstein's going to be there. You look at different people throughout the conference, and it's almost like the Hunter Renfro's at Clemson. They've been there forever. You see so many names of this New Mexico State team that you've seen year after year after year.
That's a reflection of still maybe not necessarily feeling like they're an independent. It feels like they're still in the league because Georgia Southern's played them. Louisiana has played them. They actually inked a new deal. They're going to be playing again. I think the contract is for 23 and 24. But in one way, losing them from the conference is bad because you got to figure out how you're going to fill that part of the schedule. But two, it's good because if you're in a pinch and you need someone for a non-conference game, yeah, we're 2,000 miles apart or whatever, but the relationship is there between the administrations, so you could possibly get things done. This was only done because Georgia Southern lost that series against Kent State. Otherwise, this wouldn't have been an option. But Kent State had to bow out. This gets back on the schedule. Eagles have never particularly started well in Las Cruces. They've gotten behind by double figures in all three of their games, but they've come back to in all three of the games. Last time New Mexico State played here, though, in 17, they beat Georgia Southern 35-27, and that was the year that they broke the 57-year bowl drought and won seven games. But since then, they're 3-16.
For the defensive side, under fourth-year defensive coordinator Frank Spaziani, the name that really kind of sticks out is Javon Ferguson, the linebacker. Led the country last year with over 13 tackles per game. We talked about that when we were in Las Cruces last year, that he was a guy, especially up the middle, that could really have an impact on that game. And yes, he had a little bit of an impact, but I don't know that he had the kind of impact that everybody was expecting last year.
The way that they run their defense, they ask their linebackers and their safeties to make a lot of plays.
Yeah.
They're on the field a lot, period. In fact, I'll throw a number at you since I know the numbers.
Yeah, you're the numbers guy.
Yeah, I'm the numbers guy. No team in the country was run on more than New Mexico State. That doesn't mean they gave up the most yards. They were 125th in rushing defense last year. But no running defense saw more carries against them than New Mexico State. Huh. They saw 53 runs per game. That's like seeing an option team come at you every week. Think about that.
No thanks.
And then when Georgia Southern goes out there and runs for nearly 400, got down early, of course, as we mentioned, but then came back with a roar during the second and third quarters, they were able to just about put the game away. They rallied a little bit later. But there's going to be a lot of Ferguson, a lot of Devin Richardson, a first-year starter, and then the safeties who have played pretty well, Jason Simmons and Austin Perkins. Perkins missed the Central Michigan game because of a broken hand. I believe he is expected back, but if not, Chance Cook would play, the Oklahoma State transfer. He and J.D. King were teammates before going their separate ways. Gets his first start against Central Michigan. He has 12 tackles. So,
decent.
Yeah, they're middle linebackers, and their safeties are going to make a lot of plays. It's just the way that they set up their D-line. They want to be line occupiers and then let their back seven, or in this case their back eight, make the plays.
You and I were talking earlier on this week as we were starting to put together our different notes on New Mexico State, of especially on the defensive side, they've had to shift a lot of guys around, whether this guy's starting, this guy's moving over here. And some of that is with injuries, as you mentioned, Perkins out last week with the broken hand. But a lot of it is just trying to figure out who is going to be the guy to step up.
It's a little bit funny for one reason, because their starting defensive end, Xander Yarbrough, was a tight end last year.
Yes.
And the reason why that's funny is because they graduated their other tight end, Bryce Roberts. They don't have a tight end on their roster.
No, so they don't have one.
The part of our spotting board where the tight ends go, empty.
Blank.
So it's blank, so we're going to be able to make some extra notes this week. But Yarbrough's up front. Miles Veen is somebody that's been there, it seems like, since the beginning of time. He's getting a chance to start. An injury that's really, hate to use a pun, but an injury that's really hurt them is not having Roy Lopez, their senior defensive tackle. He hurt his ankle in the opener against Washington State. He hasn't played since. He means to that defense what Tyree Turner means to South Alabama's defense. Not having that linchpin, that stocky, that hole plugger up front, I think, has really hurt them. Their best defensive lineman, though, from an outside standpoint, is Cedric Wilcox. He has tackles for loss against Georgia Southern each of the last 2 years. Somebody to mention, though, that wasn't on the team a year ago, he's a transfer, but has done rather well, Rashi Hodge, 235-pound junior coming in from Glendale Community College, same place where Teddy Gallagher transferred from to go to Coastal Carolina. He's going to make a lot of plays as well.
You look up and down, and we mentioned it on the offensive side, but this defense, you see name after name, and again, a lot of consistency with the names, but not necessarily consistency on the amount of playing time and the performance that they've shown over the last couple of years.
And the performance has suffered this year. They're giving up 43 points a game. That's 129th. 489 yards a game is 125th. Rushing defense, 243 yards a game is 128th. 6 yards a carry is 129th. Only UMass is worse. And they've hurt themselves with turnovers. They're minus 15 in turnover margin. That is last out of the 130 teams. They'll force a turnover here and there, but the offense has overshadowed that because Adkins' 12 picks are the most of any quarterback in the country. So while they may be able to do some things on defense, and they played better the last few weeks. They were rough at the beginning of the season because of the schedule, and Georgia Southern could certainly relate to that. But when one's been good, the other hasn't. And in a way like Georgia Southern, they haven't put a full game together, but the Eagles have scratched out three wins while these guys are trying to figure out how to win.
The thing about New Mexico State's secondary that the last couple of years we had heard the secondary was pretty good, and a lot of that is why a lot of teams were running so much on New Mexico State's defense, but you have one guy on there too deep, and that's Austin Perkins, who is still questionable whether he's going to be coming back or not. Again, expect him to return, but he's the only one on the two deep that has a pick this year. You have Shamad Lomax, who has 7 career interceptions, but doesn't have anything this year.
And 3 of those were in a game 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He was a cornerback in 17, played safety last year out of necessity. Now he's back playing cornerback this year. They miss Ron LaForce. You remember Ron LaForce from last year?
Oh, yeah.
The only reason I would bring him up, he had 21 tackles when these two played last year.
Yeah, I pointed to his name a lot.
When you have somebody that leaves a team but had that big of an impact, you have to find a way to bring him up. He was another transfer, only played 2 years out there. Leon McQuaker, starting linebacker from last year, out of Augusta, Josie High School, he's gone. They lost Terrell Hanks, who's on the practice squad for the Dolphins. DeMarcus Owens, another guy gone from the secondary. So they've lost some star power. Ferguson's going to make a boatload of plays. Richardson's going to make a boatload of plays. Simmons, Perkins, Cook, they're going to make their plays. But they've had issues tackling, and it seems once teams have established the run, they have a tough time stopping that surge.
Again, it's homecoming 2019 as Georgia Southern will face off against the New Mexico State Aggies at Allen E. Paulson Stadium. 3 o'clock kickoff. We'll be on the air at 1 o'clock with the Eagle Tailgate Show with Frank, Russ, Terry, and myself. And then we will kick it off at 3 o'clock for homecoming. Now, before we head out, I want to get one person that you want to see at homecoming. One former Eagle that you want to see at homecoming.
Does this have to be a former football player, or?
Doesn't have to be. It can't be DLR.
Okay. I've already seen him once this year. But I always enjoy seeing Wesley Fields.
Yeah?
That's...
All right. I'll be on that train. I'm going to go Chris De La Rosa. Haven't seen him very much this year.
Yeah, he was around a decent amount last year.
Yep. Saw him a decent amount last year. Would always come up to the stage and hang out with us for a little bit. But hope to see him back.
Get a little Kevin Ellison, a little Ironhead Gallon.
Oh, yeah. Got to get some of the old greats.
Now you're getting back into Terry's territory.
Yeah, now we're talking about Mora. We're talking...
Charlie Edwards,
yeah,
Carter
Charlie
Jones.
Edwards,
just name all the specialists. Good buddy Reed Haley.
But again, 3 o'clock kickoff from Allen E. Paulson. It's Georgia Southern and New Mexico State. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
Been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.